You are now entering the world of Musings of a Geek Podcast Network. Stay geeky, my friends.
Hello and welcome to this episode of The Movie Roast. I am your host, Scott. You can find me on Twitter at xorsonx, and I'm here with Brian. You can find on Twitter at Pure Rock Fury. Our movie that we have for you today might be a bit of an interesting one, because we are doing X-Men Days of Future Past. The only difference is this guy here watched the Rogue Edition, whereas Brian did not. So there might be a little differences in our theories and or ideas.
Great.
It's going to be interesting. I don't want to ruin it for you, but I'm totally going to ruin it for you.
All right.
Also, really quick, I do want to bring up, I don't know if anyone's listened to our 2015 extravaganza episode yet, but I just wanted to reiterate how amazing Baroness Purple is. I cannot stop listening to that record. It is so good.
It is good.
It doesn't fit on the podcast right now, but I can't help but talk about it.
Well, I'd like to throw a little bit of an addendum on there. Next Friday, January 15th, the new Witchcraft album comes out.
I saw that.
And I listened to a couple songs off it today again, and I'm pretty psyched. First good album of 2015.
There's some really weird stuff coming this year.
That's all I know about.
Early last year, I stumbled upon the site Pledge Music, and I found out that Jeremy Enoch was funding his next solo record. So immediately, being the Sunny Day Real Estate fan that I am, chipped in and have been awaiting the arrival of this new CD since. But when I was on there again today looking around, Def Leppard is trying to fund a new album. Foghat is funding a new album. There's so many like old terrible 80s bands that are trying to like fund albums, dude. It's hilarious.
Here's the thing. A Well, that has worked for bigger bands, surprisingly enough.
Megadeth's is on there too, their new one.
That's weird. That's a little weird. Because, I mean, here's the thing. Def Leppard just put a new album out like 6 months ago.
Ew.
I'm sure nobody cares, and that's the proper reaction, because that's Def Leppard we're talking about, a band who has never been good. But I'm reasonably certain that despite the fact that they're not quite the popular band they were in the late 80s, I think they made enough money to, I don't know, fucking fund your own record, you lazy scumbags.
You know who else is trying to put out like a rehashing of his 80s hits?
I'm afraid to ask.
David Hasselhoff.
Jesus. But here's the thing. That Pledge Music, Queensryche used that for their latest album, and they actually got a... I think they went over their stretch goals. They also, I mean, for people who pledged, they got all kinds of like VIP stuff, t-shirts, bonus tracks, early tracks from the album before months before anyone else even heard them.
Well, so if anyone's interested, it's still available for Jeremy Enoch's new album. If you pledge $10,000, you get a private concert.
Oh, let me just pull out my checkbook.
At your house. He'll come hang out and then play for you.
Yeah, let me just pull out the old checkbook. And,
could be a little weird when he shows up and there's only one guy in his underwear, but hey, you know, whatever.
Sup, dude? You like Doritos?
Right?
I feel weird. Oh, you're about to feel a whole lot weirder.
All right, so back to business. X-Men Days of Future Past. The X-Men send Wolverine to the past in a desperate effort to change history and prevent an event that results in doom for both humans and mutants. Directed by Bryan Singer, written by Simon Kinberg and Jane Goldman. Starring Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, Hugh Jackman, so on and so forth, Michael Fassbender, the whole world's colliding here from both movies, old and new, and all that good stuff.
Circles the globe in search of a listener. Can you hear me now?
Done.
So, basically, it starts out in the future, and there's these... I'm going to be an idiot. I can't remember the name of the stupid...
Sentinels.
Sentinels, that's it. They were originally programmed to destroy mutants and mutants only. But what happened is they started learning and predicting which bloodlines would eventually mutate, and they just started wiping out everybody. Now there's basically the Sentinels and a handful of mutants left. So what you have is a handful of mutants who continually just are on the run from the Sentinels. Every time they get found, they, you know, they find a way to escape through some kind of weird time jumping sort of deal to where it actually never happened, and they never actually found them, and it's just a giant circle. So what they want to do is the only one that is physically capable of going back to the past, because the one girl who
Kitty Pryde.
Yeah, Kitty Pryde, who she's the one that sends them back in time a couple of days or a week or so, so that the Sentinels technically don't find him. She is now going to concentrate on sending Wolverine back, because he can handle going back 30, 40, 50 years because of his regeneration ability, blah, blah, blah. He's going to go back and try and stop what started the ball rolling on the Sentinel program in the first place. Dun, dun, dun.
We gotta stop doing the dun dun dun.
I know, but I feel like it adds, because
if we had a sound effect to play dun dun dun.
I know this is gonna sound kind of stupid, because I always say sound effects cheapen the show, but I am the sound effects.
Good.
Well, we don't have any, so you know, we tried them out. It ended up being more of a distraction than anything else, so I decided that we are not gonna do it anymore. Anywho, back to the movie. Brian's going to tell you some more stuff about it.
Right. So, this is the second of a planned trilogy of the First Class. If you've not seen X-Men First Class, it takes place in the 60s during the Cuban Missile Crisis. This one takes place during the 70s before Nixon resigns, before Watergate. And this inventor, scientist, whatever you want to call him, named Bolivar Trask, played by the great Peter Dinklage.
Very, very much so, yes.
Decides that mutants, now that they've been made public, can't be allowed to just run wild, so they need to have some kind of force to be able to stop mutants from essentially overthrowing the human population.
So as happened back in the Cro-Magnon and
right,
Homo sapien days, where the Homo sapien was the mutated version of Cro-Magnon, and then they pushed them out. So he's more or less thinking, hey, if you look at history, mutants are here now. We are going to be extinct. They are the future. We need to get a grasp on this situation before it's too late.
So he creates these giant robots called the Sentinels that are able to detect mutants, mutant genes, and control them, wipe them out, stop them, whatever the end game is. And he actually says it comes from a place of admiration, that he admires a mutant's abilities and their evolution, but he also feels that it's only a matter of time before they overthrow the human population and at the very least throw them into servitude, possibly murdering everybody. So Wolverine shows up in the early 70s. He's got to track down the then younger version of Charles Xavier, and they have to find Magneto, and they have to find a way to patch up their differences, and they have to locate Bolivar Trask and find a way to stop the Sentinels program. Because at the end of X-Men First Class, the mutants fragment. They go in two different camps. Half of them go with Magneto and form the Brotherhood of Mutants. The other half go with Charles Xavier, will end up joining what becomes the Charles Xavier School for the Super Gifted Mutant Dudes, whatever the heck that school's called. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Yeah, at this point, the school is two people. It's...
Oh, now?
Yeah.
But at the end of First Class, it's not.
Oh, okay, I gotcha.
The school goes through kind of a rough period after Charles Xavier discovers that there's a serum that can allow him to walk again, but it's done at the expense of his powers, and he's going through all this emotional trauma over Jennifer Lawrence's character is
Mystique.
Mystique. They grew up together. Like, they kind of had a weird brother-sister almost quasi-romantic thing, and she leaves, and he's grieved over her for all these years, grieved for her safety, etc. She also plays a big part in Bolivar Trask, because either he's trying to apprehend or murder her, because she's like the key to the whole...
Her blood, her because blood. Of her ability to morph into anybody.
Right.
That's they want... He wants to implement that into the Sentinels so that the Sentinels can then morph into anything that they come up against. So if they come up against, you know, somebody who shoots fire, they can counteract that and, you know... Basically, he wants them to be able to adapt to whatever they come up against, mutant-wise. And she's the key to that.
Ditto.
Nailed it.
So, yeah, anyway, it becomes this big kind of, like, spy thriller kind of conspiracy film where the X-Men are, like, racing against time in the past to fix the future.
Nailed
it. That's the general gist of the film. There's also, again... As Wolverine goes back and he tries to reunite Charles Xavier and Eric Lenscher together, at first they don't really even know him because in X-Men First Class they approach him in a bar and he tells them to go fuck themselves.
Yes.
But after a while, they do recognize him and they decide to put aside their differences sort of for the common good of mutant kind for the time being. Kind of not really. The whole film, you could just tell that Charles and Eric just, they have tension. They don't trust each other. They're sort of working together, but not really.
Right, yeah. So, what, I know you were like a big fan of this, and if I'm not mistaken, you liked it better than First Class.
I did.
What did you like so much about this movie?
First of all, I loved... I am unapologetically a fan of all of the X-Men movies, and I say this, and I'm doing this podcast having not watched Days of Future Past for a while. It's been probably about 6 months since I've seen the movie again. But I've seen enough times where I know I can, you know, add my... thoughts. I unapologetically love even the quote-unquote worst of the X-Men movies. I thought The Last Stand was pretty good. I think Origins, flawed as it may be, and I know the whole Deadpool thing, I don't want to get into it because I, A, don't care, B, think it's funny for other reasons. But I am unapologetically a fan of all of the X-Men films. But X-Men First Class, to me... took all the best ingredients from all the previous movies, added a whole new layer on top of it, and just was a phenomenal movie. Like, light years better than the ones that came before, which I like. And I thought, there's no way, because this, to me, First Class was the X-Men's Batman Begins, so to speak. It was darker, it was more serious, it had a lot of underlying plot lines that kind of filtered into... you know, fill in the entire story. The whole Cuban Missile Crisis made it timely-ish in a way for its time period. So I felt like there's no way they're topping that. And then when I heard Bryan Singer was coming back to do Days of Future Past, I was like, yeah, his X-Men movies are good, but Matthew Vaughn, who did X-Men First Class, I thought just raised the bar so high. I never felt like it was possible to top that movie. And what Bryan Singer came up with was just blew my face off because I didn't think he had that kind of a film in him. Because I was accustomed to his X-Men movies, which were good, but they were a little bit more comic booky. This one is definitely in the same vein as X-Men Future Class or Future X-Men First Class, but it builds off of what First Class had already laid the foundation of. In terms of injecting like politics and real world events with the whole X-Men mythos. Plus it just had some such memorable scenes. The Quicksilver scene is so obvious but great. When Magneto lifts RFK Stadium up and drops it on the White House lawn. I like this cast better than I do the original X-Men cast, too. I like Jennifer Lawrence's Mystique, and I like Rebecca Romijn. I really like Rebecca Romijn. But I just think Jennifer Lawrence is a better Mystique.
Yeah, I mean, you basically can't deny the fact that Fassbender and McAvoy are two of the greats of their generation. Oh, yeah. Like,
that's another reason.
Like, I mean, I don't want to be, like, you know, all man-crushy over here, but those two are absolutely amazing. And then you put them up alongside with Ian McKellen, and you put in Peter Dinklage and everyone, and it's just like, dude, how do you have so much awesome in a movie?
Well, that was another thing. You have Fassbender and McAvoy as Charles and Eric, and then you have Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart, arguably as good in both those roles, but obviously much older.
Right.
Having them all in the same movie, even though they never really come into contact, except in that one sequence when McAvoy's got I forget the name of the stupid helmet.
Cerebrum.
Why was I thinking Brainiac? When he's got that on and he's talking to his future self, that scene is like really the only time any of them come together. I don't know. I think this movie just captured the era, the vibe of that era, just super well. Just the whole, you know, end of Vietnam, pre-Watergate, America's like pulling itself apart, the world is just constantly on edge and everything. And then I think that they were able to add the whole mutant threat on top of it. And it was at a time when people were aware of mutants, but not super aware of them. Because I think at that point, being where the technology was, there would be a lot of people who would have heard of mutants and like heard rumors and myths, but you know, you're not going to run into a mutant down at the grocery store like every single day at that point. So I think just the whole like rumors of mutants like running around is be like, oh, did you hear these people have powers? What the heck's that all about?
Right. I mean, it's one thing when you hear about a group on a beach that stopped missiles in a view of, you know, a couple of hundred people. It's another thing when they're on the news and, you know, carrying stadiums across the city.
Yeah.
It's a little bit of a awakening, I guess.
And that's the thing, too. Like, there are people today, for whatever reason, that believe the moon landing was fake.
Yes.
But I can guarantee you, if you go back to that time period, there was probably a significantly larger percentage of the population that thought the moon landing was fake. So if you go back to that time and you tell people there are these people on the beach off of Cuba that stopped nuclear war by doing with their hands, a few people would be like, no way. And like a majority of people would be like, that's BS. That didn't happen. That's some fake Hollywood stuff.
Yeah.
That's the stuff of a Jesse Ventura conspiracy book in 40 years that we don't know about right now because Jesse Ventura's in high school. Zing.
Wow.
Time ribbons. Been watching The Flash a lot again. I got my time ribbons all over the place.
Yeah, I'll give you time ribbons. All right, so I am actually going to disagree with a little bit of that because I personally think First Class is the better movie. I agree. Quicksilver scene is probably one of the best scenes in any movie for that year. But that being said, that character was completely underutilized. He should have been in more of the movie. That was wah. And as far as all the other X-Men movies, I've seen them all a million times. I've been watching them since they came out on a weekend basis, basically. The only one I don't really care for is that last Wolverine movie.
Now, see, I actually like that one.
To me, I hate that movie. I think it should never have been made, but everything else I thoroughly enjoy.
I see. I like that movie. I mean, it's definitely...
I mean, this. I've got problems with this movie, too, and we'll get to those later. But
wow. Weird.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's bad.
And here's another thing I like about this movie. I have the most recent collected edition, graphic novel, whatever you want to call it, of Days of Future Past. And you could see hints of the movie in the source material, but I'm sorry, I know it's considered classic, and Chris Claremont is the god of all X-Men writers, but that book is not good. And what Bryan Singer did with that source material, in terms of what he put up on the screen, is vastly better than the comics that inspired it, in my opinion. I mean, you could see the gestation of the idea, and the idea is definitely intriguing. I just don't think that the Chris Claremont run aged well at all. And I'm saying this as someone who just read it for the first time a year ago. But I remember I talked about it on a podcast years ago. Not years ago. A year ago. I just think that what he had to work with and what he came up with is so much better. Like, light years better. I got my hand in the air like...
Why don't you put your hand back in the air and tell us what you didn't like about it?
What did I... Well, okay, the Quicksilver... Quicksilver was such a great addition to the X-Men franchise, and to have him just pop in and then you don't see him again was kind of like, aw. I really, again, Kelsey Grammer played Beast in the first three movies. I don't remember the kid's name that plays Beast in these two movies, but I like him as Beast far better than Kelsey Grammer. And I felt like he did not get hardly any screen time in this movie. I felt like he got a significant character arc in First Class. This movie, he was kind of like Charles Xavier's butler. He had one big scene in the middle of London when they tried to...
he had the fight scene with Wolverine, too. In the house for like a minute.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he was hardly in the movie. And like, I really like that guy as Beast. I really like the character of Beast as a whole, so to have him hardly be used was a disappointment.
Yeah.
I don't really have a lot of complaints, truthfully, beyond those little nitpicky things. I'm curious to hear what your complaints are.
Well, first off, it doesn't, for some reason, maybe it's just me, but I feel like in just about every X-Men movie, Wolverine accidentally stabs the wrong person. Like, that's getting old. That's not a huge deal. The Quicksilver thing, of course, is a much bigger deal, but I can still get over that because I'm sure he'll have more of a prominent role later on, maybe even his own movie. That'd be nice. But also, later on, when the Sentinels are being transported by train and Magneto pulls up the tracks and manipulates the metal to insert them into the Sentinel so that he can later control them, yes, you would be able to control them physically, but that's not going to work to control their computers that are inside of them and make them start shooting people, I wouldn't think. That's iffy. But... And... This
We're
going
to need Neil deGrasse Tyson to come down on this one.
Well, I mean, basically, you have these robots controlled by some kind of computer that is not metal. So you have to assume it's some kind of polymer or plastic or even...
Well, they said that in the beginning, that the robots were constructed of some kind of military-grade polymer and...
Right, but they're still being controlled by some kind of a computer somewhere that just inserting metal into them so you can control their movements isn't going to give you access to turning on their engines and firing the weapons. And I don't know, that seems a little, maybe I'm wrong. I mean, obviously it's a fictional movie. There's no way to really test this. But the one thing, and this might ruin a little bit for you, but in the Rogue edition, this is where Rogue comes into play. When the Wolverine dorks out and stabs her, and she's like, oh my God, she's losing a lot of blood. Hey, I got an idea. Let's go get Rogue out of prison. She can steal her ability and hold Wolverine back in the past. So they go, and literally it takes 2 minutes to go break Rogue out of some highfalutin government facility where she's being held and tested on and all these experiments, and it's a terrible ordeal. And they just go and break her out, bring her over, and it's like, why did you let her sit there all this time if you could have just went and got her? I mean, it just seemed...
That's probably why that scene was cut.
No, I know. But, oh, that wasn't the only scene that was cut. I mean, there were other things that were cut that actually were kind of awesome. But, I mean, other than that, like, there's nothing. I don't have anything against the movie. I'm, by no means am I saying it's bad. It just, I feel like First Class was a stronger movie, whereas this one is maybe a notch down. And that's a very tall ladder, by the way. It's not as bad as, say, the first Avengers to Ultron. Not by any means. So I'm like trying to get a baseline here. I'm not saying it's bad, but there's just certain things that are.
The more I watch Age of Ultron, the more I'm like, nah, it's good.
I actually haven't seen it since the one time I saw it.
I've watched it like three times in parts, and I never am like pumped enough to really like sit down and get into it because it just doesn't have. The first Avengers movie is endlessly watchable. Yeah. I could watch it on FX. Yep. I could watch it on DVD. I could watch it on my phone. I could watch it at the bus stop as it's passing by me on a bus that has a movie camera screen, something or another, for no reason. I don't get that at all from Age of Ultron. Not even a Ant-Man is more endlessly watchable than Age of Ultron is at this point. The more I watch Ant-Man, the more I like it. The more I just think, it's not the best Marvel movie, but it's fun. It's definitely funny. And it's got Michael Douglas, which rules.
Yeah.
Age of Ultron has what? Not much. It's got some really good parts. It's got a lot of boring parts. And a lot of, it was all right.
Yeah, pretty much. All right, so what else is there? If you were making it, would you have done anything different?
I haven't watched it in a while, but I may have gone with a more heavy 70s influenced soundtrack. I know they used Simon Garfunkel for the Quicksilver scene, which was cool. Definitely liked that, but I don't know. I mean, they're all dressed like they're headed to see Led Zeppelin. I think, you know, throw some fog hat or some Bad Company over that. I don't know. She didn't really factor into the movie much at all, but at this point, I don't see the point in having Halle Berry as part of the X-Men cast, and she's just not, she doesn't really matter. I can't remember what his name was in First Class. I am under the impression he's Scott Summers' younger or older brother. The guy with the chest plate.
Yeah, okay.
The one who actually names Beast in X-Men First Class.
Right, yeah.
He's in this movie for like a minute.
Right.
I feel like, and I've already seen the trailers for Apocalypse. He looks like he figures in more heavily in the new movie. Why wasn't he in this movie? I know he was in Vietnam, but still, I feel like he's a good character. There was no reason he should not have been in this movie. So, just little things like that, nothing.
Yeah, I almost wonder if that whole Vietnam scene was just kind of to give you a little hint of a preview of the characters you're going to be seeing in the next movie or two. Well, it's a trilogy, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, I think this next one is it, and then they're going to do X-Factor or X-Force after this.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've already went into a little bit about what I dislike, and that's obviously the stuff I would change. Maybe not change, but, you know, find a better way to do it, I guess. I don't know.
I.e. do it better.
Yeah, right.
Hashtag do it better.
And the one thing, too, like, towards the end when the Sentinels find him, and you have now old Magneto and Storm and all of them out there fighting alongside the guys who have been running for the last God knows how long. Like, Magneto is just a badass. But then, like, he just goes down. It's like, aw. Like, I would expect him to do more, I guess.
Actually, I did think of one other thing. Not really necessarily that it needs to be changed, but rumor is that the next Wolverine movie, well, it's not a rumor. This is Hugh Jackman's swan song as Wolverine. He's been playing the character for 16 years, 17 years. He's officially announced he's not going to be Wolverine again, which tells me they're going to cast somebody else eventually. But
they're
going to
open the door for Glenn Danzig.
No, I doubt it. He's like 100 years old. And they've already started casting for the X-Men show on FX.
Because they're going to do Old Man Logan.
Mother.
Well, no, they've already started casting for the X-Men TV show that's going to be on FX starting in the fall or next year. Because they've been casting actors from Fargo. And actually, I read the premise, and it sounds pretty awesome.
Whatever. I know we've said it before, and I'm going to keep saying it. If you're going to be doing TV shows alongside the movies, you need to use the same people. Like the Flash movie they're doing, they need to use the same kid.
I don't know that. This is a totally different
I know. I'm
story.
Just saying. It doesn't. I don't know. Whatever.
You're complaining about nothing at this point. They've cast like two people.
Right. Are these two characters in any of the movies?
No.
All right. Well, then it better not be.
Irrelevant. Point is, if they recast a Wolverine for the show, it's not going to be Hugh Jackman. This is Hugh Jackman's swan song, and the rumor is they're doing Old Man Logan, which pretty much tells you it's going to be Wolverine as a super old man. Wolverine is how old he is through all these movies. This movie takes place 50 years in the future, so we'll say 2030, 60 years, 20 years, 2020, whatever. And he still looks exactly the same as he does in all the movies. Wouldn't he be Old Man Logan then? Or does he not age? Or at what point does he start aging?
He ages very slowly.
So this new series
that's coming, if they're really going to do Old Man
Logan. No, the new movie. The last Wolverine movie is going to be Old Man Logan.
Oh.
No, the series is going to be based around the Hellfire Club.
Okay.
So I don't know. I know that Sebastian Shaw will be involved somehow.
I'm kind of excited.
I doubt it's going to be Kevin Bacon.
I'm less excited now.
What if it's a young Sebastian Shaw?
He was pretty young.
Kevin Bacon's 100 years old.
Whatever.
He is 95 years old.
You're 95 years old.
I am 40 years old.
Old man Brian.
Pretty soon. But that's it. I just think like maybe they could have made him Old Man Logan, or at least hinted towards, you know, middle-aged man Logan in this movie. To bring it into Old Man Logan.
All right. All right, so overall, what kind of a number are we thinking on this?
9.
Wow, nice.
9 easy, maybe a 9.5, but I'm going to stick with a 9 just because I feel like I need to have a little room there.
To breathe?
A little room to ask, why not Old Man Logan?
Yeah, and again, I'm not saying it's a bad movie, and I'm not far off. Probably, you know, 8.5.
I quit.
I still feel First Class is the better movie.
No, First Class is pretty excellent. I can't really argue that because that's probably
First Class to me is the equivalent. It's the X-Men equivalent of Avengers. It was just awe-inspiring, and it just it brought the franchise to a whole new level.
No, I absolutely. That's what I'm saying. The fact that this movie was as good as it was, I feel, is a testament to the fact that they were able to at least match what they did with First Class, because I thought it was going to be a step back, and it wasn't.
All right. So the random question for this particular show is, in Days of Future Past, Professor X regains the ability to walk, but does so at the expense of his mutant ability. If you were given the choice to have a mutant ability but had to give up one of your current functions, what would you give up, and what would you want to be able to do in its place?
Want me to go first?
I'm dying to hear what the hell you're going to say.
Since I figured you only have so many functions that you're... I mean, these functions are all necessary, but you have to give up one. I don't want to give up taste because I love food. Don't want to give up eyesight because I like to look at stuff. I don't want to give up talking because then I won't be able to do the podcast anymore. Hearing, because I like to listen to music and other podcasts. I'd have to give up smell. But in return, I would want to have mind control powers like Kilgrave.
So I feel like...
I would go up to some
rich
person.
Well, it's basically Xavier. It's telepath. He'd be a telepath.
Whatever. Yeah, but he...
See, I feel like if you're going to give up smell, all you're going to get is the Meg Griffin fingernail growth. That's not really that big of a deal.
It is, though, because what if you're in a house with a gas leak? You're not going to smell it. What if somebody befouls themselves and you're, like, sitting next to them on the bus?
Actually, you'd never know.
That's a plus. What am I saying?
Yeah. I can't smell the pretty flowers.
I can't think of anything, though. I mean, that was really, I don't want to go blind.
Well, that's why I sat here for the last 3 days pondering this, and I basically came to the conclusion that I probably would just stick with being normal.
Jeez, what a week.
Well, like you said, I don't want to be blind. I don't want to be deaf. I don't feel like taste and smell are big enough to care about. I don't think you should be able to give up something like that and still get an amazing ability. So then you got left. You got walking. You got, like, sense of touch. Like, I can't think of anything I would want to drop to pick something else up. But if you're going to allow smell, I would do the same. I would either do the telepath thing, or I was even thinking maybe the regeneration, because, I mean, let's face it, nobody wants to die.
Yeah, well,
other than
if
that,
you got to keep going to work, nobody wants to live, so.
I just, whatever. If I can't die, why do I need to go to work?
That's true. I would be okay with living forever if I had a cyborg to go to work for me.
I mean, not necessarily forever, but, like, you know, a couple hundred years. Nice, long, good life, I guess. I don't know.
True.
All right, so.
I'm hoping to make it to, like, 90. I probably won't make it. I'll probably make it to 45, and I'll be it. My man boobs will get too full of poisonous milk, and I'll.
I could have swore the doctor said a donut a day keeps the.
I had pound cake today, not a donut.
All right. Also, in Days of Future Past, Logan is sent back in time, in his mind, to physically alter the events of the past. Name three things you would go back to alter in the following categories. Random, go.
I would prevent NASCAR from making it to Chicago.
I feel like mine's way better.
Well, here's the thing. Like, Chicago is thought of by people who don't live here in various different ways. You know, food is a big thing, because deep dish pizza, so on and so forth. A lot of different cultures here, a lot of different food.
A lot of people think gangs and
alcohol. A lot of people think gangs and they think violence and all that stuff. A lot of people think the mafia. A lot of people think the lakefront. Cultural, it's got a lot of cultural significance. It's an epicenter. It's like one of the big cities of the planet. But what they don't know is Chicago is a little bit on the white trash side also. And not just in pockets. I mean, like, we've got a significant, like, full-blown mullet population rocking it here. So we already were full-on Foghat and, you know, 38 Special. We did not need NASCAR to layer on top of the, you know, barbecue bags and bad music that permeates this city. I'm sure every city that's thought of as, like, a highfalutin, you know, progressive, culturally significant city, Seattle, Portland, Boston, we'll say. I don't know why I said Boston. That's probably a bad example. But, like, the cities that people think of, like, oh, I want to go there. There's got great art. They got a great art scene. They got a great this. I'm sure they got plenty of mullets and, you know, lowriders as well. But Chicago is, we are rocking the mullets and the classic rock. And I'm not talking good classic rock. I'm talking, like I said, 38 Special. So you throw NASCAR in here, and it just made it so much worse. Like, sometimes I drive around here, I'm like, Chicago's awesome. And then I see something, you know, guy with sleeveless T-shirt, you know, high tops. I'm just like, oh, this city. God damn it. Stupid loop. Go away.
My random category one was to go back and save John Bonham.
All right.
It's as easy as going to the hotel and rolling him over so he doesn't choke on his own vomit. Then, not saying that they may or may not have put out amazing albums after the fact, but at the very least, there was a good chance I would have been able to see them live.
True.
They could have went on tour with Black Sabbath as some kind of weird classic rock trio. With
Freedom Rock Tour?
Yeah, who knows? Who knows? I'm just saying that would be kind of
seeing
neat.
What's happened to Deep Purple, I'd be afraid to see what a 1990s version of Led Zeppelin would look like.
Well, that'd be terrible. But
literally, Physical Graffiti is their last listenable album.
You're trying to say, though, if they came rolling through here in the late 90s, early 2000s, and they were going to play nothing but music off the first, like, three albums, you wouldn't have been there?
Oh, if they were like, we're doing Led Zeppelin 1 through 4, Houses of the Holy, and we're going to do these four songs off Physical Graffiti, I'd be like, I'm there. But if they're like, oh, we're going on the Coda reunion tour, I'd be like, nope, not paying money for that. In Through the Outdoor? Nah, you can have that.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Those songs wouldn't be so overplayed if they were If they had a bigger... Well, I take that back. Rush has been putting out albums steadily, and they still only play the same six songs on the radio. So, yeah, never mind. But I'd still save them because it'd be interesting to see what happens.
No, that's true. I mean, you can't you can't argue with the first five Zeppelin records. They're pretty good. Pretty good.
All right. My next one's pretty weak, but go ahead. Number two category is world events.
I would have prevented the dismantling of the Glass-Steagall Act.
All right, you're a dork.
I'm trying to think, like, oh, I'm going to go back and stop Hitler. I'm going to go back and stop 9/11. I mean, those things are, you know, bad and horrible and so on, but what really done more damage to a lot of people than the dismantling of the Glass-Steagall Act, which kept banks in check? People are poorer. The dollar does not get nearly as much buying power as it once did. It's put a whole generation of Americans in crippling debt. So I felt like being mildly serious for a minute, and there was no reason to throw that law out other than just bankers going, we want to be bigger billionaires.
Yeah.
I can't survive off 1 billion. I need to have 3 billion.
Well, I went a different route, but I also chose not to do the, you know, if you pick 9/11, then people are like, well, why didn't you stop Hitler? And if you stop Hitler, it's like, well, why didn't you stop the Crusades? Like, all right, it's getting silly. All I would have done is went back to 2013 and stopped Steve Bartman from sticking his hand out. So maybe the Cubs could have won, and I could stop seeing this.
2003?
Yes, 2003, sorry. And I could stop seeing this stuff all over the stupid Facebook every year when the Cubs are going to do it. If they would have just done it in 2003, this wouldn't even be a thing anymore.
Yeah, Steve Bartman, way to go.
Right, world event.
Some fan you are.
Right.
Nerd.
Nailed it.
That would have stopped the ripple effect, kept the White Sox from winning it.
Maybe, but at least, whatever. Number three, personal decision. I have a feeling we get the same one on this one.
I would have gone back to 2003 and talked myself into doing extensive research before picking a college to get my degree from.
Well, I'm similar. I've also picked college. Whether that's not going at all or going away, who knows, but I would definitely would have done something different.
I'm glad I went. I got a lot out of it, despite the obvious things about it that were disappointing. But I feel like I didn't do enough hard research. I felt like, oh, they got the program that I want, and I want to make video games. So nailed it, and look at me now, making no video games. So. I did not work on Halo 5, which back then I thought, oh, I'm going to be working on Halo 3, and then 4 came, and then all the side missions, and guess who's still not working in the video game industry?
Your face. Nailed it.
Yeah. Although, I did read that Scott Snyder is going to be teaching a series in writing for DC Comics. And they've already got the class set, and I guess when people graduate, they may or may not get some kind of writing gigs with DC Comics. But starting after this semester, however, they're going to open it up to the public. So I am actually curious to investigate that, because that sounds really interesting.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well then, I think that's pretty much going to wrap us up. So, as usual, you can find me on Twitter at XorsonX. You can find Brian at Pure Rock Fury. And don't forget to head over and check out reviewandroast.com to read reviews of most of the stuff that we do here and on the other podcast. So until next time, have a good week.
You are now leading the world of Musings of a Geek podcast network. Stay geeky, my friends.